Welcome, happy Sabbath. This is Brother Jackson. The scripture says, Acts chapter 14, verse 21, "And when they had preached the gospel to that city and had taught many, they returned again to Lystra and to Iconium and Antioch, confirming the souls of the disciples." I'm repeating this because this is a very important process, as our brother stated early on in the service, how we're looking at the book of Acts. So we could see that the disciples, they were given missions, not by men, but by the Spirit. It's always by the Spirit of Elohim, who evidently and clearly selected who would go where and do what. It's not like today where people just on a whim decide they're going to do this or they're going to do that, and to no avail. But these efforts, these works, they're actually works, not even efforts, they're works, because they accomplish always what they were sent to do, were directed by the Spirit. And men and sometimes women who were equipped by the Spirit with divine power, power to heal, prophesy and do miracles, so that when the works, so that when the message is preached, the hearers would believe. And this is a principle that, according to the scriptures, never changes. It is the same requirement today. When we serve, we need the power of the Spirit today to back us up. Okay, we need that. It's not something that was just for the past. We definitely need it very much. I can't say that we need it more than the people of the past did, but I know we need it at least as much as they did. We need this, the sign. So these men were selected and sent to do a work. They accomplished the work. And the end result of the work was that they gathered believers, both of Yehudim and Gentiles. Look at the mix. Look at the mix, brethren. It's always Yehudim and Gentiles who form the congregation. They believe. Some Jews believe, some congregations, some Gentiles believe, and they form a congregation of Elohim together, of being one new person. They're not Jew or Gentile. They become one new person in Messiah. So, they're taught and allowed to grow and develop. Then the disciples continue their journey, and at the right time, the Spirit sends them back to do what? To confirm their faith. What is that confirmation? It means to strengthen, to verify and establish their faith, and then to establish leaders among them. As I was doing my nightly readings with my daughter, as we do every night before we go to bed, we were reading in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. And it caught my attention that part of the chapter references the same thing. So it says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 1 through about 7 through about 5. Let's see. It says, "Wherefore, when we could no longer forbear, we thought it good to be left at Athens alone." Let me just quick little background. What happened, the apostles wanted to see Paul and his fellow workers wanted to visit the Thessalonians so badly that it's amazing. Like I was sharing with you, it's amazing the love that the apostles really had for the people. Just read it and see their motivation, the drive of the Spirit in them to love the people they serve so much. So anyway, so here, when we could no longer bear it, they wanted so much to see them and to make sure they were in the faith, because there was a lot of persecution and temptation, persecutions going on. So, and verse 2, and it says, and sent Timotheus. So when they could not stand it anymore, we got to do something, let's send Timotheus. So they sent Timotheus, our brother and minister of Elohim and our fellow laborer in the gospel of Messiah, to establish you and to comfort you concerning your faith. See, it's the same thing that was done here, being done in Acts first. That was being done in Acts chapter 14. So to confirm, they sent him to confirm their faith. And verse 3 says that no man should be moved by these afflictions, for yourselves know that we are appointed thereunto. So that no man be moved. So there was great persecution. So the disciples, full of the love of Elohim, sent Timotheus, who was full of the power and spirit of Elohim and gift of the Spirit, as we learn of him in other parts of the scriptures, to go tend to them, to establish them, that no one should be troubled or moved by the afflictions. So we mustn't be moved and troubled by afflictions. In other words, we must turn to Elohim for us not to be moved by affliction. We must get the strength we need. This is the time for us to huddle together, to get together, to put our heads together. It's not the time to divide. It really isn't. That verse 4, for verily, when we were with you, we told you before that we should suffer tribulation. So we told you before that. It wasn't a surprise. Even as it came to pass, even as it happened. So they were told that they were to accept tribulation prophetically. They saw no signs of it, but the apostles did and told them. For this cause, when I could no longer forbear, I sent to know your faith, lest by some means the tempter, having tempted you, and our labor be in vain. So they went to confirm the brethren, just as we saw here in chapter 14. So when you get a chance, read this. It's very important. And notice the condition, suffer tribulation. Same thing that we read in chapter 14, that through much tribulation, verse 22 of chapter 14 says, confirming the souls, and that we must through much tribulation enter the kingdom of heaven, of Elohim. Now, please understand, this much tribulation is not for everybody. What I mean by that, it's not every believer who needs to go through tribulation. It's that particular generation they were in, and there was a lot of tribulation going on, and they suffer. And some of us, we all suffer one way or another. But when it's saying here, tribulation is severe troubles, where really no one could survive without the gift and protection of Elohim. So keep that in mind. You could review 1 Thessalonians to understand this confirmation. So it's a process. Those whom Elohim sends gathers people. Then when the time comes, Elohim sends someone to set elders, leaders among the people. We don't choose. We don't just get up and say, I'm a pastor, I'm this. We don't go to school to become a pastor. These things are wastes of time. They are. What we have today in society and in most of these churches are the result of the seminaries and all of these things. That's what we have today. So that's not what it is. It is the Spirit, the love of Elohim, the Spirit of Elohim. That's the qualifications. That's the source of knowledge and power from Elohim. Okay? So the congregations are gathered, they're revisited, they're confirmed. And then when the time is right, leaders from among them are chosen. Or if leaders are not there, then Elohim sends leaders to them, for them, to confirm them. So that's the process we see. So we have to keep that in mind as to how congregations are formed. They're not formed the way the world, the secular system, forms their congregations. Apostolic leadership comes by the Spirit of Elohim, by the Spirit of Elohim alone, and that those who are truly elders and pastors must have the Spirit, just as written in the law of Moses. He did not choose men who went to school. He told Moses, find men that are well, have good reputation, 70 of them. And he took of the Spirit that he gave to Moses and put it on them as well. So they all had to have that gift of the Spirit. They could not, the people even in Moses' time could not do it on their own. They needed the Spirit of Elohim. Something terrible happened down the years. The nation of Israel became apostate, and this power system, this system of divine power, was replaced by kingship. Elohim never told them to have kings. He gave them judges. So when they asked for a king, he complied. He, in humility, he's very gentle and humble, but warning them what they would suffer. Out of his love for them, he gave them one after his own heart, King David, right? And made the covenant of salt with David, that this line of people, David's people, not everyone, would have a blessing of salt, that even though they sin against the law of Moses, they would not suffer the penalties of the law of Moses. I want us to understand this. This was a blessing strictly for David's line, not for everybody else. Everybody else was under the law of Moses. If anybody else commits adultery, you die. But David, because of his faithfulness, he gave him a special blessing so that even if his line sins, as long as they stay within the covenant, they would have mercy. They would not be cut off from the generation. Doesn't mean they not die, but they would not be rejected as Elohim's servants. Then we had a worse thing happen. You can say where through that, the power of faith was lost in Israel. And so they adopted the called rabbinical leadership, where you don't go to Elohim for help. You go to a rabbi to tell you what you are to understand. Not by divine power or revelation, but by their knowledge, by learning, by much learning and study they give you. That's not how it was. Remember, Elohim established the leaders and he gave them the spirit to lead the people. But then it became to a point where it became rabbinical, where they are of knowledge, they study and study day and night, quote unquote, and then they give you their opinions and they create their own laws, their own rules. None of this is biblical. This is apostate. And we're going to go back to the text, but I just want to set up why we need to be mindful. So in the congregation of Elohim, we see this beautiful power system returned to how a congregation should be and amplified even more, where it's not just the leaders that have the power of the Spirit, but every single member of the congregation has the power of the Spirit to one degree or another. Some don't because they're not real. And they're soon removed from the congregation by the Spirit, as was Ananias and Sapphira. So the congregations of Elohim were set, as we read here, with power, only by power. And the congregation of Elohim that is true, no matter how big, no matter how small, from generations past till this very day, have always been like this. No other system is accepted by Elohim as the congregation of Elohim. Anybody who does it differently, Yeshua said, is a thief and a robber. He says, I am the door. And he is the one who established this system that we're seeing here. And so the congregations of Elohim must be formed, must follow this example, these guidelines, these instructions, these Torah found here in the New Covenant scriptures. But again, down the ages, since the time we're reading here of the apostles full of power, what happened to the Yehudim happened in appearance, I should say, to the congregation. What happened? That people denied the power of Elohim. The so-called congregations became apostate. The true members were hiding underground for their lives, keeping the commandment and whatever they can do in fear and in persecution, while the false ones grew. And then you have a similar, they don't call themselves rabbis, but they call themselves popes, the papacy. Whoa, so when you want to know something, who do you go to? Go to the Pope. The Pope tells you what to do. Pope makes the decisions. But now, we need to understand, we do not follow either the rabbinic tradition or the Roman papal traditions or the traditions of the daughters, the Protestantism. We don't follow these things. All these things are contrary to Scripture. Contrary. They may have similarities to Scripture, and that's where the deception comes. The rabbinical process has similarities to the truth, but it's not the truth. You know, Satan in his craftiness always gives a little bit of truth with deception. If he gave only lies, people would catch on and turn away. But he gives you the truth and the deception. So let's go back here so we can know what we are doing. Because some of this deception are creeping in those of us that are trying to be commandment keeping. They have unintentionally carried over rabbinical teachings in their new commandment keeping faith. As they're trying to be Nazarene or Hebrew roots, they're carrying over rabbinical ideas, thinking that they're truly biblical ideas. Okay? Just like some people carry Protestant or Catholic ideas, not realizing that all those things are wrong. And this is a start of it happening here in Acts chapter 15. Let's read a portion of Acts chapter 15 so we could delve on. Because it's important we don't fall into these traps. So it says in Acts chapter 15 verses 1 through 5, "And certain men which came down from Judea taught the brethren and said, except ye be circumcised after the manner of Moses, you cannot be saved. When therefore Paul and Barnabas has had no small dissension and disputation with them, they determined that Paul and Barnabas and certain other men should go up to Jerusalem unto the apostles and elders about this question. And being brought on their way by the congregation, they passed through Phoenicia, Samaria, declaring the conversion of the Gentiles, the nations, and they cause a great joy unto all the brethren. And when they were come to Jerusalem, they were received of the congregation of and the apostles and elders, and they declared all things that Elohim had done with them. But there rose up certain of the sect of Pharisees which believed, saying that it was needful to circumcise them and to command to keep the law of Moses." Let's go back. We have a lot of people that don't understand, and I say this not with arrogance, but it's the fact they don't understand the scriptures. Not that I understand the scriptures entirely, but there's a level of understanding we need to have before we try to teach. It's not fair. It's not just to teach on a whim. It's not right. So here's the situation, briefly. There were men that came down from Judea. That's the introduction. That men which came from down from Judea taught the brethren and said, except ye be circumcised after the manner of Moses, ye cannot be saved. Why do you say after the manner of Moses? Because they wanted to be clear, make their point, because they knew there's a circumcision of the heart. They wanted to make sure they're talking about the circumcision of the flesh. I don't necessarily think they were denying the circumcision of the heart and mind. They just wanted to emphasize that it was necessary for Gentiles to be circumcised as taught through Moses, to be saved for their salvation. And that, brethren, I can tell you outright, by the law of Moses is not true. The law of Moses does not teach that. The law of Moses does not teach Gentiles must be circumcised to be saved. There's only two situations Gentiles need to be circumcised, and we'll take a quick look at those later on. But so Paul and Barnabas greatly disagreed, greatly had no small dissension. They disagreed adamantly by the power of the Spirit, and they argued with them. They were not discussing because it was going back and forth. The Judeans, which were teaching this, were not backing down. So it was an argument. It became an argument. But what happened? They determined that Paul and Barnabas and certain other men should go up to Jerusalem unto the apostles and elders about this question. So now they, Paul and Barnabas, are told, go to the apostles. Remember, the apostles were the original ones with Messiah, the ones in Jerusalem, right? So go to them. Let's settle this, because they're in Jerusalem. Notice, because they are in Jerusalem, they're among the Jews. They'll know what to do. They'll know what the Spirit, because they are living in Jerusalem. Go to them. They're not here in this Gentile land that where this discussion here, this argument is happening in verse 1, is in a foreign land. But in verse 5, they're back in Jerusalem, right? And when they were come, verse 4 says, when they were come to Jerusalem, so they were received by the congregation and the apostles and elders. So there are apostles and elders. They're not the same. There's the congregation and there's the leadership of the congregation. There's the congregation, there are the apostles who are like the prophets in their midst, who set things, who order things, who they're basically like they legislate, they tell you what Elohim says, how it needs to be, and the bishops or elders follow the directions of the apostles to make sure that the body of believers are organized and function as the Spirit taught the apostles. That's how that works. Just like in the times of Moses. So they disagreed. But the Pharisees in verse 5, who also believe, said that they needed to be circumcised. Okay? It's interesting that there's this distinction made. I'm wondering if these are like the Nicodemuses and Joseph of Arimathea types. And what I mean by that is that they believe, but they don't join in with the believers. There were lots of people like that in those days. Not all the people joined the congregation of Elohim, even though they kind of believed. See, Joseph of Arimathea believed, but in secret. And he was accepted by Elohim. And of course, later on, he joined, but for a while, he did not. I understand the same thing happened to Nicodemus. He became a believer and joined later on. So these Pharisees believe, but we're not necessarily part of the congregation of Elohim. That's why they're called Pharisees. Congregations of Elohim don't call themselves by any sect. That's what they are. Congregations of Elohim. Kahal Elohim. Ecclesia Theos. That's what we are. We don't call ourselves these variant names. We could call ourselves disciples, or we're members of Elohim's congregation, people, his people. But congregation has the tone of organization that work together, just then people, because people could be everywhere and scattered, but a congregation is united. But it's not just united for one day. It's united forever for one purpose, and they work together. And that's why we use the word Kahal Elohim, Ecclesia, or congregation. A congregation is more than just an assembly. And we see, you will see uses of that word where you see the congregation assembled. You know, there was an assembly of the congregation. That's because, and because some people like to say assembly of Elohim. It's not really that. It's the congregation of Elohim, and the congregation of Elohim from time to time assemble to work for Elohim. Okay, let's go to Genesis. So in Genesis chapter 15, to get a good sense of this, because it's not something we're going to do in one day, because we have to get this right. Genesis chapter 15, where does circumcision comes from? What is circumcision? What is it for? So in Genesis chapter 15, verses 1, we read, and I'm not going to read the whole thing for, you could read it on for yourself. After these things, Genesis chapter 15 verses 1 says, and after these things, the word of the Eternal came unto Abraham in a vision, saying, fear not, Abraham, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. So Elohim introduces himself here, visits Abraham, but this time, when it says the word of Elohim, here is the Devar Elohim, is the Logos. So he came to Abraham. The Logos, the word of the Eternal, of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, the word of I am, the word of he who is, came to Abraham in a vision. And Abraham said, here, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless, and the steward of my house is this Eliezer of Damascus? So you know the story. He's childless, and he's asking, so Elohim says, fear not. I am your protector, I'm your shield, and I'm your great reward. It's a smart question. What will you give me? What will you give me? And then let's read to verse 6. And Abraham said, behold, to me you have given no seed. And lo, one born in my house is mine heir. And behold, the word of the Eternal came unto him, saying, this shall not be your heir, but he that shall come forth out of your own bowels shall be your heir. So notice it says, and the word of the Eternal unto him, saying, this shall not be your heir, but he that shall come out of your own bowels shall be your heir. And he brought him forth abroad and said, look now toward heaven, the Shamayim, and tell the stars if you are able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall your seed be. And he believed in the eternal and counted it to him for righteousness. Now, let's understand the process of faith here. Again, as I said, faith is right understanding that causes you to trust. Right understanding is evidence. It's understanding. You've made sense of it. You see the evidence. So, and then you develop that trust. So Elohim told them, I'm your great and exceeding reward. Did Abraham have that faith yet? No, he asked him a question. And then Elohim gave him an answer, which gave him right understanding. Because see, I don't understand. This doesn't make sense to me. I don't have a child. I only have this Eliezer here, my servant. I mean, not this, but Eliezer, his servant. I go childless. How's all of this going to be? And then he said to him, he brought him forth, shows him the star, and says, your descendants will be just as the stars. And Abraham understood, had right understanding, or had faith. How did he have faith? And the word of the Elohim came unto Abraham. That's why when I tell people don't understand Paul, the high level of Torah, that's why Paul says, faith come by hearing and hearing by the word of Elohim. It's not reading so much the Bible you get faith. It can help. But it's by the word of Elohim, when Elohim sends his word to your heart and mind to understand something, that's when you have faith. So it's by the word. So the word of Elohim came to him and told him, explained it, and, oh, thank you, Father, I believe. That's faith. Faith is not just studying day in and day and night to no avail. You know how many people do that and have no faith? You know, some of the people in the recite the Bible or come close to it and have no faith. So obviously reading the scriptures is not what it meant by faith comes by, though. Notice Paul did not say faith come by reading. It says faith come by hearing the word of Elohim. It's important that you cry out to Elohim for him to confirm his faith. This is outside of the scope of what we're studying, but it was important for me to say that. So Abraham had that faith. So Abraham believed in the eternal, and he counted him for righteousness. So you believe me. I just told you something and you believe me. And Elohim knows his heart. He believes him and he's going to comply. He knows he's going to do everything he says. So he accounted it for righteousness. How do you believe? How have you come to believe? Just by reading words? Or because many times we can't do the things we need to do for Elohim and we are afraid. It's because we don't have the faith. We need to have the faith by hearing the word of Elohim. That's why Paul said faith comes by hearing the word. So let's continue a little bit. I have to finish as time is late. But verse 6 says, and he believed was counted. So verse 18 to 20 says, in the same day, the eternal made a covenant with Abraham. So if you would, normally if you ask somebody, what is the covenant that the eternal made with Abraham? They're going to tell you the covenant of circumcision. No, the first covenant Elohim made Abram was by promise alone. Had nothing to do with circumcision. He made that promise to him alone. He says, in the same day, verse 18, the Eternal made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land from the river of Egypt, unto the great river, the river Euphrates, the land of the Canaanites, and so on, all the way to verse 19, unto the land of the Jebusites. That's the covenant made. Why? Because it was counted for him for righteousness, and he gave them that. Where does circumcision comes in? Quite a while later, that circumcision came into play. That's in chapter 17. Chapter 17, verses 1 to 4 says, and when Abraham was 90 years old, but it was sometime later, Abraham get the covenant of circumcision. Keep that in mind. So when Abraham was 99 years old, the Eternal appeared to Abraham and said unto him, I am El Shaddai Elohim. I am El Shaddai, the all-sufficient El, the all-sufficient one, the Almighty. Walk before me and be you perfect. Notice, he never said that to Abraham before. Never. First time he said, he made a covenant with him. He didn't say that. Abraham grew. That's what happened in faith and development. When you read between chapter 15 and 17, chapter 16, Read the accounts and see what the experiences Abraham has seen. Now that he has grown in his faith, the eternal vision said, walk before me and be you perfect. And I will make my covenant between me and you and will multiply by thee exceedingly. Right? So, he says, he made a covenant with him some time ago, as in chapter 15. Now he's going to make another covenant. What is that covenant? We got to skip through here a little, but read it yourself. And I will make my covenant between me and you and will multiply the exceedingly. Verse 3 of 17. And Abraham fell on his face, and Elohim talked with him, saying, As for me, speaking of himself, by himself, behold, my covenant is with you. Has nothing to do, it's my great love. As for me, it's not how worthy you are, Abraham. It's not how worthy we are, O congregation. But it's as for Elohim. So as for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and thou shalt be a father of many nations. Neither shall thy name any more be called Abraham, but thy name shall be Abraham. For father of many nations have I made thee. So names have meanings, and not in vain, and people changing their names for themselves is a waste of time. It accomplishes nothing but confusion. It only makes sense when Elohim gives you the name. Don't waste your time by all these people changing their names to quote-unquote Hebraic names or whatever names. Doesn't make sense. Verse 6, and I will make thee exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of thee, and kings shall come out of thee, and I will establish my covenant between me and thee and thy seed after thee in their generations for an everlasting covenant, to be an Elohim unto you and to your seed after you. I will give unto you, verse 8, and to your seed after you, the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession. I will be their Elohim. Remember we talked about Elohim's great project? This is a small part of this great project. That means through thick and thin, through all the sin, through all the failures to come. That's how Elohim is speaking. Through all the failures of mankind to come, of the Israelites to come, of the descendants of Abraham, I will be there. I will establish I will establish the covenant. I will be their Elohim. And verses 18, what is, hold on a second, make sure. No, not verses 18, verses 9 through 14, right? And this is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you. This is my covenant which you shall keep. Now, this is how Abraham is to what? Respond to the covenant. Notice, please, brethren, in his part, he says, as for me, in verse 4. He says, as for me, this is what I will do. Now, as for you, this is your response to the covenant. This is my covenant we shall keep between me and you and your seed after every man, child among you shall be circumcised. We know what that is, and it has to happen on the eighth day. And what shall it be? And who should be circumcised? All those who are born, native born, and all those who are bought. Only if they're bought. Those who are born, natural born, and those who are bought, who become a possession, not a sojourner, not a Gentile in your midst. You're either, it's the ownership of the people. The ownership, all that belongs to the people should be circumcised, all the males. And what is it? What is it? Verse 14 says, between he and the people. Okay? It is a sign. Circumcision is a sign of the covenant. More into the law. So that's how circumcision was established. Because before we could go back into Acts, we have to fully understand. So this is how it was established. This was the reason. Now, who should be circumcised? All those who are native-born descendants of Abraham. All those who are owned by descendants of Abraham. The Gentile, the sojourner, did not need to be circumcised here. And we'll see that in the law furthermore. But we'll continue this next Sabbath. Thank you for listening.